The following program may contain sexually explicit or objectionable language and is intended for mature audiences only. Hello, and my name is Lily. Today I am reading for Men's Hour, and we are starting off with this first article. We're actually continuing it from a previous reading, titled, Is MAHA Actually Making America Healthier? And this is written by Laura Beale. And this next section of the article is titled, Taking on Ultra-Processed Foods and Obesity. The HHS is phasing out petroleum-based food dyes and struck a deal with drug makers to bring down the cost of blockbuster obesity medications such as Ozempic. The administration has also added more than $60 million to help improve the nutrition of children enrolled in Head Start. At the same time, millions of low-income Americans face new restrictions on food assistance. Are we healthier? Yes and no. If you need a drug like Ozempic, the cheaper price could be a game-changer. Working with the industry to transition to natural dyes from petroleum-based ones is a small, healthy step, although it overlooks the major concerns with ultra-processed foods, including all the calories, sodium, fat, and refined sugar they come with. Quote, RFK Jr. is absolutely right that America is not doing well, but here's where he goes wrong. He's taking legitimate concerns, and he often boils them down to single villains and single bullet solutions, says Dr. Adams. Silver bullet solutions aren't going to make people or communities healthier again unless we take a step back and look at the broader societal causes of these issues. Recent moves will likely make it harder for millions of Americans to eat nutritious foods, which are generally more expensive than processed ones. Congress recently enacted the largest budget cuts in history to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, which helps feed more than 40 million Americans, and eliminated SNAP education, which helps families stretch budgets and cook healthy meals. Next is investigating the causes of autism. The administration implicated acetaminophen, the most widely taken drug during pregnancy, as a cause of autism and is promoting leucorevin as a treatment. In November, a CDC website that previously explained that vaccines don't cause autism now promotes a long-debunked connection between the shots and the condition. Are we healthier? No. The acetaminophen announcement simplifies autism, which is likely driven by a complex interaction between genetics and environment, in a way that isn't actually helpful and recalls a painful era of mom-blaming, as in, maybe your kid wouldn't have this condition if you hadn't taken that Tylenol. Scientists and parents have been struggling for years to make sense of the rise in autism diagnoses beyond a broader definition and wider screening. Kennedy entered office saying he was expecting to start providing answers by September 2025, as if the scientists working for decades had just been too inept to get to the bottom of it. Quote, I thought that was an ambitious goal, and if they were going to pull all their resources together, that'd be great, says Robert L. Hendren, D.O. of the Center for Autism Spectrum Disorders at the University of California, San Francisco. Even after the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists affirmed that, quote, evidence does not support a causal link between prenatal acetaminophen and neurodevelopmental disorders, the announcement created fear, doubt, and alarm. As for leucovorin as a treatment, quote, it may be relevant for some people at some period of time, Dr. Hendren says, but it's not a panacea. And about the vaccine theory. No environmental factor has been studied more. Numerous rigorous studies conducted around the world have failed to find a link. Why don't we know what causes autism? Quote, it's at least 100 genes, and they're not the same genes for each person, Dr. Henderson says. Those genes interact with something not yet understood, or with many things, in a child's environment to affect the brain. That's why autism symptoms fall on a spectrum. There's this old saying, Dr. Henderson says. Or, sorry, it's Dr. Hendren, Dr. Hendren says, you see one kid with autism, you see one kid with autism. Next is reducing fluoride exposure. In April, the HHS secretary called for states to ban added fluoride from drinking water. His remarks came during a news conference in Utah celebrating the state's prohibition on water fluoridation. The FDA has also restricted the sale of unapproved prescription ingestible fluoride products. Are we healthier? Unlikely. The mineral has been added to public water supplies since the 1940s, when dental health was so bad that many World War II recruits were turned away because they didn't have six top teeth that met six bottom ones. Cavities cause more than just pain. They can lead to missed work, poor diet, and tooth loss, and they cost money to fix. Fluoride in drinking water drops rates of tooth decay by 25% in cities that have it compared with cities that don't. Opponents of fluoridated water are concerned about research that suggests a correlation between high levels of fluoride exposure and reduced cognitive function in adults, as well as lower IQ scores in kids. The results include data from countries where people are exposed to high fluoride levels, not only from water, but also from sources like burning coal, which produces a stew of pollutants linked to impaired cognitive development. Proponents point to science showing that the link appears only with fluoridation levels at least twice as high as the legal limit in water supplies. At the current level of U.S. water fluoridation, quote, there's no evidence of concern with IQ, says Stephen M. Levy, DDS, a professor at the University of Iowa College of Dentistry and Dental Clinics. If you drink tap water and fluoride is removed from your local supply, you'll have to be really diligent about toothbrushing, using an oral rinse, and getting dental care. Not everyone has access to that, and those are the people who need fluoride most. Juneau, Alaska is a case in point. The city stopped fluoridating its water almost 20 years ago. Back then, kids on Medicaid had about 1.5 cavities a year. After the fluoride was gone, that number rose to about 2.5. What you should do to protect your health today. This next section is by Tyler B. Evans, MD. Right now, we are experiencing a new kind of uncertainty when it comes to American health. Policies are shifting fast, often with more attention to political symbolism than evidence, and the result is a landscape where the guardrails that once quietly protected people are becoming thinner. When you spend enough years practicing medicine in places where health systems have collapsed, you learn a difficult truth. People suffer when the structures around them fail to protect them. I have worked in places where public health was stripped to the bone, where illness surged, not because people made bad decisions, but because the systems around them disappeared. When I look at what is happening in the U.S., I think about those experiences. Public health is designed to make healthy choices easy. It sets standards, funds prevention programs, expands access to early detection, supports mental health resources, and ensures that evidence shapes national guidance. When those structures weaken, risk finds room to grow in the gaps that appear. Men feel the effects first in higher blood pressure, in missed cancer screenings, in delayed vaccinations, and in unaddressed stress. The shift is gradual, but the consequences accumulate. The reality wherein is that vaccines are becoming a personal puzzle rather than a national benchmark. Cancer research has lost investments that once turned scientific discovery into survival. Even debates about nutrition have shifted towards sentimentality. The idea of beef tallow or cane sugar alone will protect us from chronic illness reflects a desire for simplicity in a world that is far more complex. The same is true for fluoride, which has become a flashpoint with the push to reduce fluoride exposure. MAHA has given Americans more autonomy while removing the infrastructure that once made the autonomy safe. To be fair, there are a few encouraging signals. Americans are paying more attention to movement and have started questioning the role of ultra-processed foods. but awareness without support simply assigns individuals more responsibility while leaving the systemic barriers unchanged. So the real question is, how can men protect themselves in a moment when national prevention efforts are fading? The strongest step men can take is to act early, act consistently, and act with the understanding that personal choices matter more when national systems are stepping back. Not because the burden should fall entirely on individuals, but because health does not pause while politics reorganizes itself. Here's where to start. 1. Stay current on vaccines, even if the messaging feels muddled. Vaccines remain one of the most effective tools in medicine. They prevent hospitalizations, reduce long-term complications, and protect the people around you. If national campaigns are quieter, you still have local options. Pharmacies, clinics, and community health workers can guide you. 2. Get screened before you feel sick. In my clinical work, the most heartbreaking cases are the ones where a disease had been quietly advancing for years. Early detection matters for cancer, cardiovascular disease, and metabolic issues. An annual checkup is not a luxury, it is a lifeline. 3. Move in ways that reduce stress. Men are often told to chase peak performance. That is not what health requires. What protects you is steady movement, walking, strength training, any activity that lowers inflammation and supports mental resilience. It is not about chasing an ideal. It is about consistency. 4. Protect your mental health by building real connections. Loneliness weakens the body as much as the mind. Men often believe they should bear stress alone. That belief is killing us. Find someone you can talk to. Reach out to people who matter. Connection is medicine, and it is in short supply right now. Next is this article, this story written by Richard Dormant. And once again, this is from the Men's Health magazine. It is the winter 2026 edition, if I didn't mention that earlier. And this is titled, "Is Alp Addictive? Heck yeah, it's addictive. Riding shotgun with Tucker Carlson on his road to nicotine moguldom, Maha megastardom, and absolute all-American dominance of the so-called manosphere." Of all the underrated musical acts in American history, Tucker Carlson says as we pull into a two-lane in southwestern Maine, can I just say that the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band is probably at the top of the list? This is not the first take I expect from Carlson when we meet near his home in the middle of October. In the weeks leading up to our meeting, I immersed myself in all things Carlson, and I had read that he is, in name and deed, in no particular order, a racist, misogynistic, anti-Semitic, ethno-nationalist, permanently aggrieved, let-me-talk-to-your-manager, Karen. I was expecting an angry person, unhinged, a personality and presence befitting, quote, one of the more extraordinary trajectories into insanity I've ever witnessed, a former friend of his told me. What I was not expecting was the Grateful Dead dad settling into the driver's seat of a Chevy pickup, shaggy-haired, smooth-skinned, and dressed in a puffy green L.L. Bean vest he's worn since 1983. We were setting off for his family's shooting and fishing camp, about a 40-minute drive from where he records his blockbuster podcast, The Tucker Carlson Show, so he had swapped out his customary Birks for Chukkas and fired up an aggressively middle-aged dad playlist that complemented his red and blue flannel shirt. He does not wear a seatbelt, and he keeps his eyes on the road. I'm here to talk to Carlson about his year-old line of nicotine pouches, ALP, which he launched at the end of 2024, and which makes up a small but growing fraction of a $5 billion and rapidly expanding global market. Carlson loves these pouches the way most people love, well, I'm not sure I know anyone who loves anything as much as Carlson loves these pouches. From his first stirrings each morning to his final flickers at night, he has a thin white nugget nestled firmly between gum and lip, powering his body, supercharging his mind, and delivering him from the fatigue that might weigh down another 56-year-old building his own business. He is a nicotine evangelist, if not the nicotine evangelist, and over the past 5 years, he sort of became synonymous with nicotine pouches, just as nicotine pouches sort of became synonymous with an inchoate online movement that some have taken to calling the manosphere. His constant praise of the pouches, and in particular his ill-fated love of a brand called Zyn, has made him currency with a new generation of men who have barely heard of Jon Stewart, much less Paul Begala, and landed him on the podcasts of people you know, Joe Rogan, Theo Vaughn, and ones you probably don't, the Nelk Boys, a knucklehead collection with 8.4 million YouTube subscribers, who have also hosted Andrew Tate, Conor McGregor, and the Donald Trump. To this younger audience, he became Tucker Carl Zinn, a cool uncle and something of an edgelord, quick with DEI jokes and worldwide insights and asides about vaccine safety, really, and Tate being misunderstood, go on, and the existence of aliens and demons, okay. Unlike in his latter days on Fox, all stone-faced and seething with hemorrhoidal contempt, he's clearly having a ball on these shows. He's at once totally at ease in his body and visibly wired, and his tendency to speak in winding paragraphs and his joyful, high-pitched Amadeusian laugh, he's like the guy at a party who seems like a good hang until he starts talking about the deep state. So it was, and he was, on our drive through what Carlson calls, quote, the poorest part of Maine. Weathered roadside houses and yellowing trees mingle next to stores advertising cannabis, CBT, and kratom in their windows, with gas stations and grocery stores blurring together as we wrap up our jam band discourse and get down to it. Carlson had just gotten back from a work trip in D.C., where he'd lived for most of his adult life and raised his 4 kids. Yesterday, I was staying at the Four Seasons in Georgetown, and I come out of my room, and there's a guy sitting on a stool 2 doors down in the hallway. He's a Secret Service agent. Hey, how you doing? I'm a huge fan, he says. Can I get a picture? Another Secret Service guy comes out and takes a picture. We love ALP. And I say, hold on. I run back to my room, since I always keep logs in my bag, and I bring it back and give them each a log of ALP. I ask, who are you protecting? Kamala Harris. And I said, what's she like? And they're both like, what do you think she's like? You know, her husband doesn't like her. Why should we? The story is pure Carlson. Every man among the elite, political gossip with a mean streak, journalist with an eye for the unfact-checkable detail. He knows full well the Secret Service doesn't comment on protection services, except that an agency official later confirms to me that the Secret Service no longer protects former Vice President Harris and hasn't in some time. There may have been 2 guys at the hotel who love ALP, and they may have been protecting and or talking bad about Kamala Harris, but they weren't Secret Service. Whether you believe any of it depends on how much you believe anything, Carlson says these days. He says a lot during our drive to and from the camp about his narrow, deep belief in the transformative powers of nicotine, about the state of men and women, quote, pretending to be men, and how his friend Bobby Kennedy is going down to D.C. about the things they don't want you to know about, or what they are going to keep you and other are doing to keep you and other men down. Today he's speaking truths, sowing doubts, and just asking questions to a skeptical audience of one, but most days he's talking to millions of rapt listeners. The Tucker Carlson Show is presently America's 6th most listened to podcast on Spotify, and he regularly posts clips to his more than 16 million followers on X and YouTube, to say nothing of his tight circle at the very highest levels of government, who buy whatever it is Carlson happens to be selling. And he's selling it all, nicotine and conspiracy and grievance alike, with a little pouch dissolving in his mouth, the very stuff of life pulsing through his bloodstream and keeping him and everyone around him slightly on edge. Carlson has loved nicotine his entire adult life, and young adult life, starting with cigarettes in 1983 as a boarding school teen, before adding Copenhagen Dip to his daily rotation. Quote, "For the majority of my life, I smoked Camel regulars, but the problem with Camels for me was you almost couldn't smoke enough. You would always be burning for another, right? And you could never really get full. It's almost like eating candy." He quit smoking a decade ago and took up nicotine gum and dip, whatever else he could fit in his mouth, until a fateful family gathering in 2020. Quote, "I was having dinner at home, and one of my daughters brought her boyfriend. He goes, 'Have you heard about nicotine pouches?' I had never heard of it, so I tried one, and I thought it was delicious." That Carlson, a terminally offline Gen Xer, had never heard of nicotine pouches isn't surprising. Native to Northern Europe, the category was first introduced to the U.S. market in 2016, and after a sleepy few years on the shelves, exploded in popularity during the pandemic, mostly through Gen Z influencers hyping up the alleged energy-boosting, mind-enhancing benefits of the product through viral videos shared and consumed in peak lockdown boredom. The small white pouches, which look like steroidal Tic Tacs, and also go by lip pillows, cushies, deckies, and upper deckies, contain nicotine salts and artificial flavorings. Without the tar and fewer of the carcinogens that make cigarette smoking so deadly, pouches became a less unhealthy way of ingesting nicotine. Monthly sales of pouches tripled between 2021 and 2024, and male consumers leading the charge, and Zyn, a Swedish brand acquired by Philip Morris International in 2022, driving the growth. There were other brands vying for the precious real estate in Americans' mouth. On Rogue and Velo were early competitors, but it was pretty much Zyn from the jump. Its consumers, or more accurately, its fans, created an internet subculture that some would call the Zinternet, and they minted all manner of sticky memes and punny neologisms, Zimbabwe, Zinpocalypse, that hyped up the pouches and turned a generation of exceedingly online users on to nicotine. Into this mix came Carlson. Quote, "I was an extremely enthusiastic user of Zyn for 3 or 4 years, he says now, and he let everyone know it. In early 2023, on the Nelk Boys podcast, Carlson shared an imagined and unsolicited ad campaign for the company. Quote, "Zyn is not a sin. Zyn is a life-saving medical product that enhances male vitality and mental acuity. Zyn is like the hand of God reaching down and massaging your central nervous system." In a related video that circulated on social media, the boys brought Carlson out to a field and dangled a merry-go-round-sized tin from a hovering helicopter to his astonished delight. He looked like he was witnessing the rapture. Quote, "This is the greatest day," he cried, "salvation descending from the heavens like a meme culture messiah." This is the part where I admit that I do not care for nicotine pouches. I've tried different flavors and strengths, and they've left me dizzy and nauseous and reminded me of vomiting in my parents' front yard following a disastrous teenage dip-swallowing incident. Riding shoulder to shoulder with Carlson, I asked him to tell me exactly what it is that makes these things so special. Quote, "I love the taste," he says. "I love the convenience. And above all, I loved the full nicotine saturation of it. Maybe for the first time in 25 years, I felt like, oh, I have enough nicotine, and you can use it all day from the second you wake up until the second you fall asleep. And I do." I tell Carlson that it sounds like he's addicted. Quote, "Am I addicted? Yeah, it's in the same sense of I'm addicted to eating or breathing. I could stop doing it, but the benefits of doing it far outweigh the downsides. I haven't seen a downside. Talking up the supposed benefits is actually what led to his founding ALP. In an appearance on This Past Weekend with Theo Vaughn in late 2023, the conversation naturally turned to Carlson's favorite subject. Quote, The truth is, Zinn is a powerful work enhancer, he told Vaughn before adding coyly, and a male enhancer, if you know what I mean. It was Carlson, would later explain to Politico, a joke, but watching the clip and listening to a separate, unrelated podcast with Lex Fridman, in which Fridman tells his guest, Andrew Huberman, PhD, that Carlson once told him that nicotine literally makes him super hard, and it's clear that Carlson isn't really joking. To which I say, fine, God bless whatever works for Lil Tucker, but companies need to be extremely vigilant about someone making public claims about their products, whether that person is a paid spokesperson or not. For the record, nicotine is a vasoconstrictor. It reduces blood flow, including to the genitals, so the erectile function claim is not unproven. It points him in the wrong direction. At the time, Zinn's application to market its product in the U.S. was still under FDA review, and while the company may not have minded Carlson talking up God massages with the Nelk boys, the genital joke thing on Theo Vaughn was a bridge too far. Philip Morris sent a letter to Carlson's team asking him to stop making claims on its behalf, and Carlson, who had been giving Zinn endless amounts of free promotion through years of TV and podcast appearances, was very upset. Neil Patel, Carlson's best friend since college, remembers hearing from him. The letter Tucker got, Patel says, quote, he was so enraged, he said, we need to destroy them, he said. Quote, it annoyed the hell out of me, Carlson says of Zinn's letter. I can't stand big companies. I worked for a big company for most of my life, and I have a great deal of residual resentment. But both Carlson and Patel were full-blown nicotine addicts, so rather than switch to another brand, they decided to start their own. Quote, we reached out to every nicotine pouch manufacturer other than Philip Morris, Carlson says, because by this point, it became really clear that Zinn was not just annoying, but also kind of a dirty product. Like when we found out that 70% of Zinn users use the product rectally, we thought, this is not for us. I paused a moment and waited for Carlson to smile or for a joke to land. Instead, I had Johnny Nash telling me it's going to be a bright, 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 sunshiny day, while Carlson tapped along amiably on the steering wheel, his expression giving nothing away. I've read a lot about Zinn, I tell him, but I've not read that. Quote, 70% of Zinn users use it rectally. What is your source? Just observation. So they'll put a pouch up there. Yep, it's consistent with their daily rituals anyway, so they use it as a suppository. The idea being that it absorbs faster. I don't really know what it is. It's a lifestyle choice, and I want to be clear that I'm not judging it, but I'm uncomfortable with it. Later, Carlson would confirm to me that he had no data to support the claim. It was just something he could tell from watching Zinn users walk, quote, in a very clenched, penguin-like manner. He actually thinks the percentage is higher, but he's being conservative. Turns out it was a joke, even if it's closer to a gay smear disguised with a smirk. Philip Morris declined to comment. After meeting with multiple potential partners, Carlson and Patel made a deal with Turning Point, a Kentucky-based tobacco brand, in September of 2024, and they empaneled a kitchen cabinet to develop Alps' different flavors and strengths. Quote, everyone in my family uses nicotine, Carlson says. My son, my sons-in-law, my brother, my nephews. So, just like any consumer product, you want to consult the people who love it and who understand the category, who understand the product. And so I had this just incredible focus group in my family because we had just all grown up with nicotine. The brand launched with 5 flavors and 3 strengths, 3, 6, and 9 milligrams of nicotine. Carlson prefers the 9s in spearmint, and whereas Zinn pouches are dried packets that require a few seconds of moistening in saliva before releasing nicotine, earning them the sobriquet tea bags, Alps come pre-moistened, locked, and loaded for immediate absorption. Battelle differentiates Alp from other celebrity brand deals because, quote, it's actually real and people know that Tucker is a true user of the product and he loves the product. It's different from, you know, Tucker Carlson's steak knives. Battelle also leans into Alp's position as a smoking cessation tool. Quote, I personally think of it on a harm reduction basis. Millions of people are still dying every year from cigarette-related illness, so I feel very good about adults switching to nicotine pouches. Carlson finds a different kind of validation in his new business. I find it incredibly amusing. There is something about selling nicotine that makes me laugh, he says. I love nicotine. It's got a kind of faintly naughty odor, which is not deserved, but it, like, gets the right kind of people out of joint. When you're like, kids need more nicotine, people just go bonkers, and that always makes me laugh. Not that he would ever say kids need more nicotine. Never. Once again, as a reminder, this program may contain sexually explicit or objectionable language, and it is intended for mature audiences only. Now continuing on with the article. Since launching ALP, Carlson has spent a lot of time talking up the physiological or neurocognitive impact of nicotine. He doesn't cite many studies, and he isn't much for data. And the, quote, benefits of nicotine pouches drop down on ALP's product page references convenience, discretion, and ease. Quote, to be totally honest, I still don't know that much about the science, he says. I look at my own life. I don't go to the doctor. I've never been to a gym that I'm aware of. I like pizza a lot. My health regimen is I stay very close to my wife, Susan, who he's been with since they were teenagers at boarding school, which I think is really important for spiritual and physical health. I'm outside every day. I like physical labor. I take a sauna every single day of the year, and I use nicotine. And how do I feel at 56 without going to the doctor? I feel great. So from my perspective, nicotine works because it's worked for me. Other things that work for Tucker. He follows his daily sauna with a 3-minute ice bath, during which he says the Lord's Prayer and communicates with God. He does not use deodorant or moisturizer because, quote, I don't think chemicals are great. He washes his face and shaves with a Dr. Bronner citrus bar soap, and he avoids white bread and social media. With the exception of the softer jawline that seems to befall us all with age, he looks pretty much the same as he did on Crossfire. For the past few years, nicotine has become a favorite topic of the biohacking set, with podcasters like Peter Attia, MD, and Huberman devoting multiple segments to its impact on the body and mind. Mental acuity, attention, focus, and memory. There's some good research linking nicotine usage with potential short-term mental hashtag gains. There's also nicotine's rare effect, resulting from how it triggers the release of dopamine and GABA in the brain, of helping a user feel both energized and relaxed at the same time. Carlson knows all this, even if he doesn't really want to talk about it. Quote, I hesitate to cite studies, but most of the studies confirm what wise people already know, and anyone who uses nicotine pouches regularly can tell you from experience the benefits, right? And you could say, there are downsides to using nicotine. I'm totally open to that, but there are downsides to most things. But first, you have to tell me what they are, and then we have to have a rational conversation about whether or not they outweigh the obvious benefits. No one has those conversations. It's just, nicotine is bad, it's naughty, it's a sin. Okay, tell me why. Shut up. He's not telling me to shut up, but the woke straw man, or in his likely rendering, straw woman, admonishing him. I tell him he's not entirely accurate. There are lots of people having this conversation in a pretty nuanced way, and I can't find anyone who thinks nicotine pouches as a tool for quitting smoking are naughty, much less a sin. I ask Carlson whether he's alarmed by any of the research that connects nicotine to elevated heart rate and blood pressure and to atherosclerosis, the hardening of the artery walls, which are linked to hypertension, heart attacks, and strokes. Quote, it does raise heart rate and blood pressure, he says. So does running. Okay, it constricts your blood vessels. So what? Well, that's bad. Well, tell me why it's bad. Because it could lead to heart disease. But does it? We can't tell you that. His reliance on a one-man Socratic dialogue can be dizzying, mostly because it shows just how little Carlson thinks of the people who disagree with him. It's not enough that someone can have a different point of view. They must be wrong. It's not enough for them to be wrong. They must be lying, or corrupt, or worst of all, dumb. He casts his critics in the dimmest and most punishing of lights, and then he claims that he is the one under fire. Still, I push back. Nicotine pouches have been around in the U.S. for about 10 years, I remind him. There hasn't really been enough time to do the kind of double-blind, peer-reviewed longitudinal studies that scientists rely on to make sure stuff won't kill us. He pauses. Okay, well, then we should just say that. We don't know. This is the closest he comes to conceding a point, though he is clearly annoyed. Quote, I'm open to the possibility of downsides, that it causes some weird disease, that we just don't know that. I'm always open to the possibility that actually the Earth revolves around the Sun and not the other way. I mean, we're always having our assumptions overturned. I get it, but after 42 years, I can say I sincerely don't know what they are, but I definitely know a lot about the upsides for physical, psychological, and brain health. I change the subject to something that everyone can agree on. Nicotine is super, super addictive. I know this in part because I came of age in the 90s, and the message was drilled into us every health class and PSA. I also know it because of every tin of Alp, because every tin of Alp and every official brand promotion carries a warning. Quote, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. Yet, unlike generations of nicotine-pushing executives before him, Carlson says he delights in the label. Is Alp addictive? Yeah, it's addictive. He laughs to me. It's so good, it's addictive. It's a move straight out of jiu-jitsu or the Trump White House. Own the criticism, flip it, then sell it. And while you're at it, question the very basis of the criticism to begin with. I mean, what is addiction? Carlson asks, which I quickly realize is not a rhetorical question. In what sense is nicotine addictive? It's addictive in the same sense that every deeply rewarding act is addictive. Every time you do it, the desire to do it again is reinforced. I mention the withdrawal symptoms that accompany addiction, the irritability, nausea, headaches, and all-around misery that kept generations of people chain-smoking until they couldn't breathe. They needed nicotine to function, and simply be. That is addiction. What does that even mean? I feel that way about sex. Am I addicted? I don't know, Tucker. He laughs. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. To me, there's no greater compliment. That is so good, it's addictive. I love nicotine so much that I never forget it. I don't leave the house without it. Because you're addicted. That's what I'm saying, he says. Between June of 1983 and October of 2025, I quit nicotine for 6 months, and I can tell you that my wife, my employees, one of my children all asked me to go back on it. One of my employees used the phrase fat and crazy to describe me. I went back to it, and I'm grateful that I did. In the plot of Mad Men, Don Draper and his clients at Lucky Strike are freaking out because the government has forbidden tobacco companies from advertising the health benefits of cigarettes. How can they possibly differentiate their smokes from the other guys? And then it hits Don. This is the greatest advertising opportunity since the invention of cereal. We have 6 identical companies making 6 identical products. We can say anything we want. He then gets into his famous It's Toasted pitch, YouTube it, and the point is crystal clear in the Cartesian logic. A brand is whatever it says it is. The rush to carve out distinct brand identities in the nicotine pouch market is the same, and when he first announced he was launching Alp in the fall of 2024, Carlson told the Wall Street Journal that Zyn, quote, is a ladies' brand and not a brand for men. He also referenced political donations made to the Harris campaign by rank-and-file Philip Morris employees, and in Carlson's political calculus, donating to a Democratic candidate indicates a bias against nicotine and, by extension, nicotine users. Why would you ever give money to someone who hates you? He asks Zinn users. Alp, he implied, would be everything that Zinn is not. Not just a brand for men, but conservative men. The brand's Instagram grid soon filled with images of rugged, bearded guys beating each other, firing semi-automatics, hunting, subduing alligators, and being Mel Gibson. Women occasionally appear on the grid. They uniformly look like contestants on Love Island. The Alp user of the week is called the Alp Alpha, caps theirs, and a helpful us-them guide to Alp's competition describes them as woke and Alp as based. Internet speak for reality-based, i.e. not woke. Over on TikTok, posts offer adages like, can't call yourself a man if you don't swallow Alp spit, and mama raised a real American and not a teabag princess. Teabag equals Zinn. As with Zinn, Alp has attracted fanfic posts on social media from the so-called Alp movement. My favorite post is an AI-generated video showing Carlson and a humanoid Alp tin launching Zinn tins into the air from a catapult towed by a Trump-branded pickup and then shooting them down with semi-automatics, all under the dulcet tones of heavy metal. By all means, sound on. Carlson insists to me that Alp is, quote, not a political brand and it's not about politics. But what Alp is doing here, it's not subtle. In telling me that Zinn is a brand for sorority girls and pushing the narrative that Alp is for hunters, fighters, and other traditional he-men, Carlson is building off what NYU professor of psychology Eric Knowles, PhD, describes to me as, quote, the precarious man theory. It observes that manhood is something you earn, and men who aren't living up to these standards of masculinity are deemed not real men. Quote, Carlson is in the act of socially constructing a new element of masculinity. He's saying, you know what will help us show your masculine bona fides? Using Alp. It's a precarious manhood with a promo code. Another psychologist, Adam Staniland, PhD, from the University of Richmond, explains that the big picture challenges facing young men today, low labor force participation, wage stagnation, declining marriage rates, quote, have left them feeling under threat and uncertain. And that's when they seek out these darker corners of the internet or people like Tucker Carlson. There's this anger and insecurity that he can tap into by saying, here is the way you achieve the status that you want to prove, that you want to prove your masculinity. You just pop in a nicotine pouch. Carlson would hate that I'm bringing psychologists into this article, especially since wise people already know all this. A colleague of his from the Daily Caller told the New Yorker that Carlson, quote, understood that there was something stirring in the psyche and the mind of Republicans and conservatives. Tucker, like Trump, represents the return of the alpha white male to our politics. This was in 2017, and the alpha white male energy has only grown more potent in the decades since, with Carlson celebrating all the Alp alphas of the world and selling Alp-branded trucker hats that say, for lips, not for libs, for $29.99. Carlson has a theory for why the nicotine pouch market skews so male. Quote, nicotine use, because it's discouraged, is not something that people who deeply care about what everyone else thinks are going to do. It's considered forbidden, and men are less likely to make their decisions based on that. This is particularly true of young conservative men, many of whom came of age during a period that the New York Times, Ross Douthat, once called, quote, the Tucker realignment, in which, quote, the newer, and especially younger, right is defined by a politics of suspicion, a deep mistrust of all institutions, and a comfort with outsider forms of knowledge and conspiratorial theories. It didn't help when then-Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer shuffled into a press conference in 2024 and called for the FDA to investigate nicotine brands for targeting kids. "It's a pouch packed with problems," he croaked, which was basically an invitation for teenage boys to try Zyn. This led a murderer's row of conservatives in the House and Senate to stage a Zynsurrection, with elected officials taking to social media to defend the brand. My favorite line of the whole boondoggle came from a person named Greg Price, then the director for a far-right operation called the State Freedom Caucus Network, who said, quote, "Liberals fear a society when a man wakes up in the morning, drinks black coffee, pops a cool mint upper decky, and takes on the world. A man with nicotine, protein, caffeine, and creatine coursing through his veins is an unstoppable force." Price, of course, went on to work at the White House, and nicotine pouches have become a rallying cry for conservatives against liberal scolds and Democratic overreach. Take it from their cold, dead hands, Chuck. I ask Carlson if he's ever worried that Alp might become a hit with women, a ladies' brand like Zyn, if he's too successful. Quote, "We have a lot of female users," he says, "including my wife. But what we don't want are 45-year-old, unmarried, angry Kamala donors. They're never going to use it because it's like nicotine is bad because it's making men more male. They hate that." I ask him for an example of who's saying this. Quote, "It's just that it's not even about gender," he says. "They've got Tim Walz scolding you for something that is not only harmless, but great." He's referring to taxes levied on nicotine products by Walz as Minnesota governor. In 2024, the Trump campaign, targeting young male voters, created a series of spots in battleground states featuring Kyle Forgeard of the Nelk Boys and Jake Paul, and framing Waltz's tax as anti-Zyn. Trump won men under 30 handily by 16 points. Carlson's face, already a touch pink, starts to turn red as he raises his voice to the straw man / woman. "Stop lying. The fact that it's a crime to say that nicotine is harmless but great, which it is, why is that forbidden to say? F you, actually, that's what I think." It's a heated moment, the closest he comes to losing his temper, but I'm still stuck on the 45-year-old, unmarried, angry Kamala donors living under Carlson's skin. I tell him that I have read many, many times and in many places that he doesn't seem to like women very much. He takes a breath and smiles. Quote, "It's just silly. I mean, anyone who knows me knows I like women. Do I like women impersonating men? No, I think they're ridiculous. I think female bankers are ridiculous. It's a joke. I think female combat marines are a joke." When you say they're impersonating men, quote, they're pretending to be men, and I think they look absurd. I think they know they look absurd, and they're angry about it, and I think they impose that anger on the rest of us by attacking nicotine pouches, for example. But women? No, I love women. I've had the same female employees for many, many years. Last winter, 5 years after submitting its application, Zyn received FDA authorization to market its nicotine pouches to the public. Alp is expected to receive approval this winter, a mere year and a half since its founding, which would indicate that the current administration sees the value of getting more nicotine pouches to more Americans. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has been seen throwing in a pouch every now and again, even during a televised congressional hearing in early 2025, and Eagle Eyes have concluded that he is an Alp man. Carlson has a long relationship with Kennedy. When Carlson was traveling the country with the Tucker Carlson Live tour, a 16-city speaking tour he embarked on a year after leaving Fox News in 2023, he hosted Kennedy twice and found common ground in their contempt for big pharma and corrupt politicians. Kennedy, of course, went on to take control of Health and Human Services, and for Carlson, the verdict is still out on how his friend is doing. Quote, "I love Bobby, and I just think it's an impossible situation. There's so much money at stake, and so much money is made by poisoning people and destroying their lives. He's in a very tough spot. He's in charge of the largest federal agency, but he's not in charge, ultimately, of the executive branch. He declines to speak about Kennedy's actions around vaccine safety, but he does have something to say about Kennedy's boss. Quote, "I will say that Donald Trump taking the COVID booster, I didn't see that coming, and I just want to be very clear that I'm disgusted by that." As to whether he's spoken to any friends in the administration, Kennedy or Vice President J.D. Vance, a friend who also employs Tucker's son, Buckley, to expedite Alp's application with the FDA, he says no. Quote, "We shouldn't need FDA approval. I just want to be clear. I'm not grateful. What people who live mentally in the old America don't understand is that no one cares about the law anymore. Every convenience store in America is packed with illegal products, and no one's doing anything about it. It's filled with kratom and illegal Chinese vapes. Your average Nilla wafer is like 10 times more dangerous than your average nicotine pouch. The whole thing is absurd, and I'm sick of playing along." It's a commentary straight out of the Make America Healthy Again playbook, and Tucker's embrace of nicotine fits neatly into the larger pattern among MAHA types to hate on the FDA, questioning medical consensus, and recast problematic faves, psychedelics, raw milk, tanning, in a health halo. With the MAHA thing, there's, of course, a lot of bull that attaches to any fad, and there are scammers and quack products. But at its core, the idea is, let's not tamper with nature too much, and that's been bedrock belief of mine since childhood. I don't take vitamins, and I've never supplemented. Also, for anyone who watched his 2022 documentary, The End of Men, and remembers its famous exhortation to expose your testicles to red light therapy in order to increase testosterone production, Carlson can confirm that he has never tanned his balls. Even the idea of a red light freaks me out. What is that? You may recall that we had originally set out for his hunting and fishing camp, and we spent an hour walking part of the 100-plus acres of land of which Carlson is undisputed lord and master. He shows off the new gas lighting that he had just installed in the main cabin. He fires some of the rifles that make up his small but fearsome battery. He walks me along the banks of a stream where he and his family fly fish for hours on end. There's a pristine outhouse and an expansive skeet shooting range and sweet grave markings for his late beloved dogs. He seems genuinely at peace, even happy, as he describes coming here with his wife and kids and extended family. He seems at home. What more could a guy want? I asked that question to a person who knows more about Tucker Carlson's career than just about anyone. Jason Zengerle spent 4 years reporting his new biography of Carlson, Hated by All the Right People, and spoke to dozens of people who've witnessed Carlson's extraordinary journey from CNN, MSNBC, and Fox to the center of MAGA, MAHA, and the Manosphere Venn diagram. Quote, "I don't think just being a podcaster is on his agenda," Zengerle says. "I think being a nicotine pouch mogul is nice, and it's a good way to stick it to the woke people at Philip Morris, but I think he has greater ambitions." In 2024, the press had some fun throwing around Carlson's name as a possible vice presidential candidate for President Trump, and while Carlson denied having any such aspirations, Zengerle doesn't buy it. Quote, "I think if he plays it correctly, he's someone who could plausibly be president. He can say all he wants that he doesn't want to do it. But what else is left for him at this point?" A reporter attending a Tucker Carlson live show once described seeing "No One Can Cancel Tucker" t-shirts in the crowd. And sometimes it seems as if Carlson is actively testing the claim. Most recently, he hosted far-right flamethrower Nick Fuentes on his podcast and listened passively as his guest slammed, quote, "organized Jewry." He also just told me that female combat marines are a joke, and we'll see how that goes over. If there is something that would turn his legions of listeners and viewers, his followers, really, against him, he hasn't said it or done it. Not yet, anyway. Carlson and Patel are bullish on Alp's growth this year. Patel told me the brand has a goal of selling 100-plus million units by the end of 2026. And after that, who knows? Nicotine is addictive, and so is attention. So are influence and power. And what used to be enough is slowly, then suddenly, no longer enough. And as Carlson knows better than anyone, a person addicted to something will always, always want more. Alright, and for our final little article, we're going to finish up with something that was read probably a couple months ago, but we're just going to go through it again. It is titled, Not So Fast. You've heard good things about fasting, but what about the Fast Mimicking Diet by Julie Stewart? The Fast Mimicking Diet is a 5-day eating plan that's like a fast, except, surprise, you can eat and drink. You limit calories, 1,100 the first day and 700 to 800 on the rest, largely through soups and nuts. Valter Longo, PhD, designed the diet for cancer patients, though he says anyone can benefit. The promise? Longo's company, El Nutra, sells a 5-day fasting mimicking diet in a box, about $200, under the name Prolon, and it claims 3 5-day cycles of the diet can fuel your body into rejuvenation, longevity, and healthy living. Other advertised benefits include better metabolic health, cellular rejuvenation, and weight loss. The good. There are some promising, though small, studies on a fasting-mimicking diet in humans. Research suggests the FMD could reduce body mass index, fasting glucose, triglycerides, total cholesterol, C-reactive protein, a marker of inflammation, insulin resistance, and liver fat. The not great. Most active men need roughly 2,600 calories daily, so only 750, about what you'll get after day one, is extreme. In addition to soups and nuts, Prolon's meal includes olives, herbal teas, and a proprietary glycerol drink mix. The lack of variety might make you feel deprived, and then you're stuck with it for 5 days. If you don't like those foods, you're out of luck. There are no substitutions. So the verdict is that the plan is too restrictive for active guys. And that's all the time we have for in today's reading of Men's Health Magazine for Men's Interest Hour. Thank you so much for listening to the Talking Information Center, and I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day.